pod people. It's been a little crazy lately, but we're back on track now. In case you haven't been able to tell, I am sort of figuring out the podcasting thing as I go along. So sometimes crazy scheduling things will knock OddPod off course, and it's just all part of the adventure, I guess. So anyway, this week I was able to talk with pianist Christopher Narlock, who has his own studio in Ravenswood Manor where he teaches so many students. He also continues to perform in the Chicago area, collaborating with players from Del Niente, Mo Crep, lots of cool people. He also has a couple of other projects going on. Okay, so I'm with Christopher Narlock in his studio. Are you a Chris Narlock or a Christopher Narlock?
That's a good question. I go by Chris with my friends and musicians. I like to have my students call me Christopher.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's kind of a good balance between casual and formal.
Right.
Instead of Mr. Narlock,
right.
They'll call me Christopher or Mr. Christopher.
Right. Okay. Yeah. All right. Mr. Christopher.
Yeah.
Also, like, can I just point out that the last name Narlock is a great name? That's a very, cool. It's like
Thanks.
A very strong name. It honestly kind of sounds like a mythical creature that comes from the sea a little bit. But so I feel like it's a very strong name for a piano studio, and people will remember Narlock Piano Studio.
Cool. Thanks.
So thanks for sitting down with me today. So just to kick off, how did you first get into music?
Well, my dad started me with piano lessons when I was six. And it was a rule in our house where we had to practice a half an hour every day until we were 18 years old.
Oh my God.
There's no choice about it. So
you will learn piano and you will practice it every day until you are 18.
Yep. So it was like another thing, just like doing homework.
Mm-hmm.
So for a large portion of my childhood, it was just like a routine.
Yeah.
And it wasn't really much different from everything else.
All right. And then at what point did you, I assume that you like majored in piano performance in school.
Mm-hmm.
At what point were you like, yeah, I want to do that?
In high school, I was really into music in general.
Mm-hmm.
I played clarinet. I started that in fifth grade. I took that very seriously. My dad actually was a choir director. He does that on the side now. So I was in a bunch of choirs. I was in his choirs.
Okay.
So it was at some point in high school, I think it was my sophomore year. I knew I wanted to go into music.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't really sure quite what, but then I knew I had to just pick something and go with it. So I went with piano, and I just started practicing that a lot.
Nice.
Yeah.
Also, wait, I can't remember. Where are you from?
I'm from Wausau, Wisconsin.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
It's kind of the north central part of the state.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So you're probably cold a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this weather doesn't.
This is normal. Like, this is
me.
Fine.
Yeah.
you're prepared for our one last snow that always happens in April.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know the drill. at what point, now you have this, like, pretty like well-established piano studio, at what point were you like, I will now build a piano studio, it will be my own space? When were you like, this is going to happen now?
Well, it didn't really happen that way. Yeah, I didn't even really know if I would like teaching until later on in college.
Uh-huh.
I was just focused on performing and practicing.
Right.
And then I took some pedagogy classes because I knew that that's something that is probably going to be part of my life.
Mm-hmm.
I started teaching a couple of lessons just for that class, and turned out I loved it.
Yeah.
So that was later on in my undergrad. And then I did more of it as a grad student. And in grad school, I started developing a curriculum and ideas for studios and things like that. I knew I was going to go into Chicago because my wife was at Roosevelt University.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that's how I got here.
Right.
So I started researching like where are good places in Chicago and what are good rates and things like that.
Yeah.
And
logistics.
It was really just all pipe dreams. I had no idea that it would actually happen. It was for a class too, for a pedagogy class.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then when I got to Chicago, I just worked at a bunch of music schools at various places.
Mm-hmm.
For about a year, and then I started the studio after that.
Wow.
Like a year after I moved into Chicago.
So working for other music schools, you know, one thing that you don't have to deal with is, you know, as much billing and scheduling and all the sort of like
right.
nitty
yeah.
gritty. Was that sort of a new challenge for you when you first started building up your own studio and having your own space? Was that something that you were like, oh, this is annoying?
I actually prefer it.
Oh, okay.
Because I already doing lessons independently. I did a little bit of that beforehand.
Uh-huh.
So I already had my own studio policy and
okay.
an idea of how I wanted to
yeah.
work out everything. And I kind of preferred that over what the music schools were doing anyway.
Sometimes people are, yeah, sometimes schools are not any better at it.
Sometimes,
like, oh.
yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Were there any other, like, unique challenges to having your own studio that you didn't anticipate?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, so there's a lot of red tape I had to go through the city of Chicago just to have a permit and
right.
to establish this as a business.
Right.
So getting it inspected and having it wasn't too bad because it was an art studio, so it was already being used for kids and teaching anyway.
Uh-huh.
So it was already zoned for it and all
okay.
that.
Okay. So, I mean, was this... When you ended up with this space, where mm-hmm. did you find it and you were like, oh, this is a great space? Or were there any other like areas where you were considering?
So the story goes, I was actually teaching in this area and a piano teacher had found me and wanted to meet up with me.
Mm-hmm.
So we just met up for coffee. This was back when I was teaching at a few other music schools. And she said, I have to leave... the state. I have to move because my husband is getting a job elsewhere. And I have a piano studio and I'm looking for a teacher to take over my students.
Yeah.
She had about 20 students at the time.
Oh, wow.
And it was in this area and I didn't have a place to teach them. Uh-huh. I knew it was a great opportunity and I didn't have the capacity to teach them at the schools where I was teaching
yeah.
at. So I decided to look around and I walked around the neighborhood and there was this space and there was one other space next to me that was up for rent.
Okay.
And turned out to be a great deal. I checked it out. I found that it was a good size for teaching lessons and that was my main focus. So,
okay.
Yeah, it was really scary
yeah.
at first because I didn't know if I would be able to keep it going.
Absolutely.
I had like just barely enough to get by.
Yeah.
But I knew that it was either like now or never. So
right.
I just,
like, feel
went
like
for
somebody
it.
Offering you potentially as many as 20 students is like a good catalyst for, okay, I guess I'm going to sign a lease now.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's yeah. Like you said, it's very now or never kind of situation.
Mm-hmm.
And so what year was that when you started here?
That was in 2011.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Kept it going. No, that's great. And at what point, and now you host a lot of, you basically like curate concerts
mm-hmm.
and host concerts here. At what point did you decide to do that? Or was that something that you'd been wanting to do for a long time?
It hasn't. I had a friend ask me if they could perform at my studio.
Uh-huh.
And the only time I had ever done that is really for my students so that
okay.
they could play for each other.
Right.
And I thought it was a great idea. So I said, sure, let's
like,
do
that
it.
That sounds fine.
It's a good idea. So then.
When was that?
That was in 2015.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then there were a couple others after that, and it started to kind of become a thing. Where
it's just taken off.
A couple friends, more friends, started asking me to play here.
Yeah.
So then I decided to make it a thing, mm-hmm. and to do more with it. So I got more chairs.
Right.
And I sort of, you know, things like that.
Right.
Chairs more equipment and.
And you, I mean, I've looked at your website and sort of looked at the event, and it's really picked up. You have a lot of
it
people
has.
Coming through here.
Yeah.
And for the most part, do you just do kind of a suggested donation kind mm-hmm. of thing? Is that pretty much all you do, and you don't really like charge people to come in?
It is. And there's two reasons I do that. One is because I feel like it's great for the community just to be able to come in even if they can't afford anything.
Yeah.
Also, to charge an actual ticket fee, I need a license for that.
Oh, well.
Yeah. and the place it's not really big enough to justify all the licensing fees
that
and that whole process. There's a lot to go through with that too.
Yeah.
It's kind of a separate like venue thing. So I want to keep it small and
absolutely. That makes sense. And I feel like the vibe is really good when it's small. Just having been here for performances mm-hmm. and stuff, I think the vibe is good. It's small and intimate.
Yeah.
And do you I mean, I would assume this, but maybe I shouldn't. Do you encourage your student? Do you say like, "Hey, there's this performer who's coming in.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that you should come see them."
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, I mean, I would think if I was in your position where I had, obviously I'm not, but like if I was in your position where I had a studio and I had students and I had performers coming through, I feel like that's such a good opportunity to be like, "Hey, student. Here's this like great example of like what you could do someday."
Yes.
I assume you take advantage of that.
I do that. I try to push them to come. Most of my students are pretty young.
Okay.
And most of the performances are around their bedtime.
Right. I kind of forget about that.
Because they're usually at 8 or 8:30 p.m. And the parents are like, "Well, how long is it?" "Well, it's an hour, maybe more." And "Oh, well, maybe in a couple years."
Right. I guess it is kind of a matter of not just negotiating with your student, but also with mom and dad.
Yeah.
Which is a challenge in and of itself, but also, you know, it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking earlier about the posters on your wall. And I know sometimes you post like pictures of on Facebook of the posters.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about like when that started and sort of the catalyst for basically just describe the posters, because this is an audio format. If you could just tell listeners like what's happening with the posters here.
Sure. So this actually started way before I even started the studio.
Oh, okay.
I made a CD of composers
mm-hmm.
and I had it focused on classics, on piano music. So it was all piano music. It was mm-hmm. all like the most famous composers. And I told them to listen to one composer a week, and the assignment each week was to describe the music and to draw a picture of what the music reminds them of. So they get to draw.
Oh, it's very multidisciplinary.
but also they should find out some history, like when they lived and where they were and why they're famous and things like that.
Yeah.
So they did that each week, and there are about 20 composers on the CD. And then by the time they've finished the whole list, they get to choose their favorite one.
Okay.
And then do a poster on it.
Oh, okay.
Most of them didn't do that, but some of them did, because I didn't have any place to display it.
Right.
They would just like hand me a poster, and I was like, "Oh, cool."
And you're like, "Yay,
and that's
a poster."
It. Yeah. So it became more of a hit when everybody
obviously
else could see it.
Yes.
Yeah. And then they would see it. They would see the other posters and want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So inspiration.
Yeah.
So that was cool. It picked up more. And then I started doing new music lists.
Right.
And that was around the time where people didn't use CDs as much and YouTube and internet. So I would give them links or just tell them to find whatever they want with those lists.
And all the and kids then, are so savvy yeah. now with the technology, so they can handle links.
Right. Just give them a name and they
and they're
know
like,
what to
oh,
do.
Google.
Yeah, it's amazing. and so recently I decided just to tell them who they should do. Like, you should like this person if they don't know.
Right.
I have a few posters of students who they chose that person because they really like them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good mix of things now, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel, just to sort of give people an idea of what's up here, we got some Joan Tower, little Nadia Boulanger, mm-hmm. Lin-Manuel Miranda. I love that we have Hildegard up here.
Yes.
And yeah, we have a lot of ladies mm-hmm. up here, which mm-hmm. I think is really important.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a lot of like little girl students?
I do, yeah.
And do they like get excited about like, oh my yes. god, a lady composer?
Yes, they do.
There are a lot of dudes. Like,
wow,
let's
they
be
exist.
Real.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember like the last time I was here, I don't remember exactly what I read, but it was just some of the things that these kids write. It's like, Terry Riley is, you know, he came from here and he wrote these pieces and he is not dead or like
yeah.
just like, you know,
right.
the important stuff. So, but I really like the posters. It's one of my favorite parts of your studio.
Thank you. And to give a description, they're basically collages.
Right.
So they can print pictures, of the composer or of things related to the composer. There's drawings. And sometimes they write everything by hand. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they print it out and they design it themselves. So it's whatever they want it to be.
Yeah. They're very colorful, like literally very colorful. And I was wondering, do you have any like specific goals for the future of your studio other than just like keeping it going? Because I mean, that's like, that's also a goal. Like,
yes. Yeah.
You never know what's going to happen. So. Do you have any goals for your piano studio, both in regards to like your students or like to the space itself? Are there more things you want for the space?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's a lot of directions I can take.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of them I'd like, and a lot of them I don't.
Right.
One big thing is, especially with piano teachers, is I could move into a bigger space,
right.
have more rooms to teach,
mm-hmm.
I could hire other instructors, become more of a music school.
Mm-hmm.
That I decided I don't want to do.
Yeah.
Because it's so much administration and
I feel like you would have to be doing a lot more paperwork.
Yeah. And I don't want to do any more paperwork than I'm already doing.
You're like, I would prefer to teach.
Yeah. Yeah. So I really like it here. I just want to keep it, you know, my own as far as like teaching.
Yeah.
So I'm really happy with that. I want to keep that going.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
As far as the concerts, I think it would be great to have a regular series.
Yeah.
Right now the concerts are kind of here and there.
It's a little bit of hodgepodge sort of.
Yeah. Yeah. I might have a concert once and then not for a couple of weeks, mm-hmm. but I might have a few concerts in 2 weeks or something.
Yeah.
So so it kind of comes and goes like that. And I think we need to have like every night, mm-hmm. Just like once a week, have like a series going.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So if it picks up, if it keeps picking up,
yeah.
I think I want to try to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how many students do you have right now?
I have about 65.
That's so many students.
Yeah.
That's a lot of students. Is that kind of like your ideal number? Are you feeling like...
I think it is because
yeah.
I had a few more and then I just promised myself that I wouldn't take on any more students, even if I could, because
mm-hmm.
I'll usually have a spot here and there.
Yeah.
And it's tempting to be like, oh, yeah.
Oh, I should fill it with a student. Yeah.
It's getting to that point where I don't really... I don't know that I can handle more students.
Yeah,
even if the schedule allows.
I feel like
so.
If I had like 30 some students, I'd be like, oh, like doing good.
Because I need to practice too.
Right.
Not
you
just
know,
my
you
students.
Have, you have stuff going on. So
yeah.
So other than you know being an educator and a venue runner of sorts,
sure.
obviously you also play still.
Yeah.
So can you talk about some you know things that you've done, things that you have coming up?
Sure. There's a lot that I could say. I feel like it's kind of a loaded question. When I was in school, I really focused a lot on the standard piano rep, especially solo.
Yeah.
So I did that intensely for the entire time I was in college for 6 years.
Yeah.
And it was so, it had such a profound effect on me that I kept doing that on my own for a few years.
Yeah.
Just doing solo recitals. And then I started noticing more of my friends doing other things with other people. And I started going to concerts.
Yeah.
To their concerts, and I started meeting more people, and I thought, hey, this is kind of fun. I should do more of this too.
Yeah.
So that's when I started getting more into new music.
Yeah.
And I just kept, I did more of that, just going to concerts and meeting people and playing with people.
Yeah.
And I feel like sort of my performance mission has drastically changed.
Yeah.
Because of that. Which I think is really neat. It's really exciting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Do you have some performances coming up? Or
yeah, I have a few projects that are still in the very early stages.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I have one big project that is happening for sure.
Yeah.
But not until November.
Okay. Are we allowed to talk about it? Is it super?
Yeah,
secret?
We are. Okay. I'm super excited okay. about it, and yeah, it's public information.
Okay.
So Kaylee from Quince,
yeah,
is singing with me,
oh,
and
awesome.
We're doing Schoenberg's Opus 15, The Book of the Hanging Gardens.
Ooh, oh yeah. My God, that's so exciting!
Yeah. So we had. We had that we knew we wanted to do,
yeah.
But it's only about a half an hour. So
right.
like, well, what else should we play? It's
mm-hmm.
kind of a half of a program.
Mm-hmm.
So we were just brainstorming endlessly on anything, and it just seems like there's nothing else that pairs with it. That's
like, oh, of course, this should be on a program with us.
Right.
Yeah.
That's just as great.
Yeah, yeah.
There really isn't anything as great
that
compares to it.
Yeah.
That's for piano and mezzo-soprano.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided to commission new pieces.
Mm-hmm. To fill that void.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So we have 15 composers.
Whoa.
Doing, yes. Each doing their own version of one of the songs.
Oh.
So we get Schoenberg's original 15 songs and then 15 new songs by 15 new composers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's really exciting. Oh, my
yeah.
God. Wait, can you tell me like a couple of the composers? Are they mostly local or are they like all over the place?
They're mostly local.
Okay.
I want to say most of them are from Chicago.
Okay.
But yeah, a good number of them are. Some are from New York.
Okay.
There's a couple from various places. So
but mainly Chicago.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mostly people we know that we're close to.
That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that's super exciting. You said it's happening
yeah.
in November?
Yes.
Okay. That's really exciting. I'm stoked. I'm going to keep an eye on it. And other than that, you mentioned that you write a newsletter.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about
it? Yeah. I wouldn't say that I actually, well, I do some writing, but mostly editing.
Oh, okay.
It's for MTNA's Chicago division.
Okay.
CAMTA, CAMTA.
Mm-hmm.
So I do their newsletter. It's the organization here in Chicago is about 180 piano teachers.
Oh my goodness.
In the Chicago area. Yeah. So it's pretty exciting. There's a ton of things that they do. Especially if you're a pianist or piano teacher, you should definitely check them out
mm-hmm.
at CAMTA.org.
Mm-hmm.
a little shout out. but yeah, I do their newsletter. It's become very much like an email thing
okay.
now, and that's once a month.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, it's just like a volunteer thing.
You also run something called New Music Study Group. Can
that's
you
right.
Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'd love to. So when I decided that this was a good place for performing,
mm-hmm.
I wanted to tell everybody about it. So I
right.
sent this email to everybody I knew who might be interested.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of a friend came to me and said, hey, I think we should do a study group for music. And
with like a bunch of question marks? Like
no. Well, yes, but and it should be about new music too. His name is Elliot Kless, and he recently got his doctorate for composition at Northwestern University.
Okay.
So we were sort of co-hosting it together, and he did the first presentation, and it went really well, and so we decided to do it once a month on a Thursday night.
Okay.
So we've had various people do mostly presentations, sort of like informal lectures.
Yeah.
But we've also done group discussions on various topics and everything in between. So we keep it varied between formal and casual.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're mostly people who attend are mostly musicians or composers in Chicago who are really interested in new ideas and and meeting other people.
Do you have any interest in including, making an effort to include people who are not necessarily musicians or composers, but, you know, more people who just have sort of a, I don't want to say like amateur interest, but a, not professional interest in it necessarily?
Yeah, I told all my students about it.
Right, right. Well.
So it's very, I don't think that it's for kids because...
Right.
Just because of the nature of the group. But I have an adult student that took it on right away and goes to as many as he can.
Oh, that's cool.
And so, yeah, he's my piano student, and he's not, he didn't really have any music background before he started taking lessons.
Okay.
And he just attends out of curiosity. So there is that too.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. Do you have any goals for that group, or is it? I mean, it's just sort of an ongoing way to, you know, keep discussion going.
It's definitely mostly ongoing. The main goal would just to keep spreading the word and to make sure that people know about it, because it's free and it's a great way for people to have an academic experience outside of academia.
Right. And yeah, absolutely.
College and all that.
It sounds like a good way to make new music sound a little less, or seem a little less unapproachable when you're having it in that kind of a informal-ish, I'm so eloquent, informal setting. And just like
right, because you don't have to be a student. You don't have to sign up for a class.
Yeah.
You don't have to be associated with anything.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for sitting down with me and talking about yourself and talking about your studio. Good luck with everything.
Thank you. Great.
Thanks for listening to Odd Pod. Episode 7 should, emphasis on should, come out on Thursday, April 20th. So keep an eye on Facebook and Twitter. The OddPod Twitter handle is @OddPodShy. That's OddPod, C-H-I, by the way. So keep an eye on Facebook and Twitter for updates.